Mr. Chair, commission members, thank you all for having me here tonight. Not many of you, I don't see a whole lot of familiar faces, but I spent the first 20 years of my career on land use and zoning, and so it's been about a year since I reviewed anything like this, and this is kind of like homecoming for me to be able to get back and look at the KRS and the zoning ordinances and surrounding land uses and things like that. So I am going to go through this, through your staff report pretty completely. If there is anything that you have questions about and want to stop, we can stop and clarify or whatever as we move forward. So I usually read the request to begin with. The applicant, Craig Fowler, is requesting the rezoning of approximately 1.822 acres, 79,372 square feet, located along the west side of Jefferson Street, Kentucky 139, approximately 257 feet north of the intersection of Jefferson Street, Kentucky 139, and Cerulean Road, Kentucky 124. The property is further described as parcel number 39-031 by the Trigg County Property Valuation Administrator. The applicant has provided an exhibit, which is also available for inspection at the office of the Cadiz Trigg County Planning Commission. The property is currently zoned R2, medium density residential district, and the applicant is requesting that the property be zoned I1, light industrial district. So just to get started, get acclimated with the property in question, we're going to go through a few slides. This is an aerial photograph taken off of Google Maps, and I have highlighted the property in question with a red. And actually, for those of you all that are sitting up here and maybe not be able to see as well, I have printed these off as well. So let's do that. I should have printed enough for all the commission. You want me to put them up here? Looks like I got four extra. So. Now I have two. Anybody? Going left? There we go. All of those slides, these are just copies of the slides you're going to see here. So that'll help you kind of follow along, and maybe if you have questions. Like I said, this is a copy of the aerial with the property in question noted in red. This is a copy of the official zoning district map for the city of Cadiz. It was adopted, it's dated 1985, but the signature is 1989. So that is the official date of adoption is 1989. And then here is a zoomed in area version of where the property is. You can see, and this is also noted in your staff report, the existing zoning designation is R2, which is medium density residential district. And the vast majority of property on this side of the road is the R2. You have an I1 district that is not contiguous on the same side of the road from the applicant's property, and then you do have the I-1 district across the street. That's the former grocery, and I think most recently used as the barbecue restaurant. I did go out on site. Here's a few photographs. I am standing on the opposite side of the road looking directly into the property, and as these photographs progress, I'll be turning to my left. And we'll make a total 360. So this is the starting point, just to show you the character of the property as it currently exists, as well as the surrounding land uses, which are important to the review that we'll get into here in just a little while. Now, this is looking back towards Cape, towards the main part of town. on 139 towards the intersection there with Cerulean Road. These properties are across the street from the property in question. I also have, I always try to do video in addition to photographs. So if we need to review that after the staff report, we can do that as well. I do have that, the ability to pull that up while we're here. You can see the residential properties across the street. And then this is looking towards the I-24 on 139. This last photograph I took as I was walking back to my car, just as to note, this property does have a large pond that is existing in one of the back corners. The property kind of grades down from the right-of-way and goes toward this ponding area down there. I did check, you know, the FEMA flood maps, and there wasn't a flood zone or anything noted there, but that pond is existing. So, all right.
Can I ask a question?
Mr. Underwood?
Well, for evidentiary purposes, let's let the presentation
okay.
be made. And the order will be, once the presentation is made, the applicant who has the burden will have an opportunity to make the presentation. All in favor of the application will also have a chance to speak. Those opposed will have a chance to speak. And then depending on what the comments made by anyone opposed, we'll let the applicant answer those questions. And then we would ask that your comments be directed not to each other and in a dialogue, because the tape can't identify who's the speaker.
Okay.
So if you would please direct your comments to the chair, that everyone and all of you who have been sworn by Judge Wilson will have an opportunity to speak. And questions that you have, either of the staff report, questions of the applicant, questions of the chair or me, we'll be glad to answer those. Fair enough?
So moving right along on your staff report, item F on page 1 of 15, I have described some of the traffic information, and I've got a slide with that here. There we go. And as you can see, the traffic counts for Jefferson Street, which is Kentucky 139 north of the property in question, are 2,535 vehicular trips per day, and that's based on a 2021 KYTC count. Traffic counts for Jefferson Street south of the property in question are 2,620 vehicular trips per day, and that's based on a 2020 count from KYTC. Also, under traffic, we have provided you some generalized information as it relates to the types of uses. The first table that you see on that page are the land uses that would be allowed as the property is currently zoned. And that's single family, multifamily, which is low rise, and then multifamily mid rise, which would be duplexes, apartments, things like that. And the average vehicular trips per day per dwelling unit that goes along with that. Now, we base that information on the Trip Generation Manual 11.1 edition from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. It's a pretty common resource used by planners for the projection of traffic counts. The applicant is requesting that the property be zoned I-1 light industrial. And under that designation, I've given you a table of the different types of uses that might be allowed under that zoning classification. Also in the zoning ordinance, it states gasoline, oil, or alcohol storage above ground in excess of 500 gallons or other light industrial uses not listed above shall be considered special exceptions and will require written approval of the Board of Zoning Adjustment. On page 3, I've provided you a chart of possible land uses that would be allowed under the proposed designation and the corresponding average vehicular trips per day per 1,000 square feet of gross floor area. Those vary from warehouse, mini warehouse, wholesale market, manufacturing, hardware paint store, and freestanding discount store. And beside that, you can see the average vehicular trips per day per 1,000 square foot of gross floor area. As provided in the request, the applicant has indicated they intend to construct a Dollar General store on the property in question should the request be granted and the property zoning designation be amended. A freestanding discount store has the potential to generate an additional 53.87 vehicular trips per day per 1,000 square foot of gross floor area. Again, that is based on the Trip Generation Manual 11.1 from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. Per the application package, the size of the store is approximately 10,640 square feet, which would result in a potential for an additional 573 vehicular trips per day. As previously stated in the staff report, individual siting could have traffic generation potentials that are higher or lower than this potential average that's based on the 1,000 square foot of gross floor area. Also on page 3, I've provided to you the relevant portions of your comprehensive plan that deal with housing and commercial uses. And those go on to page 4 as well. The future land use map, I believe that I have that on here as well. Yes, future land use map. I think this is also included as an attachment to your staff report. The future land use map indicates this particular property as a low to medium density residential. Oh, shoot. I hit the wrong button. So right here, it's a yellowy, beige-ish color on this particular map. And I may have it. There we go. I have a zoom in with the legend so you can kind of see that. The future land use map and your comprehensive plan shows these purple areas that you see here as industrial uses, and this little triangle of property right here as red, which is commercial. Now, the difference between your comprehensive plan, future land use map, and your zoning map is your future land use map and your comprehensive plan is a reflection of what's out there on the ground. And what's out there on the ground isn't necessarily always identical to what your zoning map is. That's why across the street on your zoning map, you see that that little sliver of red on this map is actually zoned industrial, but the land use across the street has historically been commercial. Another unique thing about the city of Katy's zoning ordinance is it builds upon itself, meaning if something is zoned business, you can have houses and commercial uses in a business district. If it's industrial, you can have houses, you can have businesses, and you can have industrial uses in an industrial district. It just kind of builds on itself as the intensity of use increases. Those lesser intensive uses are still allowed. So, under recent physical, social, or economic changes, the application as filed by the applicant did not indicate any recent social or economic changes to the property in question. The appropriateness of the original zoning, according to that map, the original zoning appears to have been R2, which is the current zoning designation, and based on the photographs and on-site visits, you can see that the vast majority of the surrounding property is either agricultural in nature or housing, residential. One thing I'd like to call your attention to on page 5 under item M, unique features. The applicant did indicate in the application that the planned development, should the property be rezoned, would be the development of a Dollar General store. And in the application, the applicant indicated that a variance would be required for the proposed development, as it only has 35 parking spaces instead of the required 68 under the city ordinance. It's important, the staff feels it's important to advise you during this staff report that KRS 100.247 states that, you know, variances have to be granted based on a dimensional nature, meaning you cannot, if you are to make a variance of something that is in your zoning ordinance, it has to be related to dimension, i.e. height, width, setback, things of that nature. You cannot vary from a number or any other type of requirement that is under your zoning ordinance. Yes, sir.
For clarification, this board is not a variance board. Okay. You see that reference in the staff report, but for variances under a zoning scheme in a municipality, any variances can only be granted by the Board of Zoning Adjustment for that municipality. This body has no jurisdiction over the granting or denying of any variances in the city of Acadia under the zoning scheme. Okay, so that information is there, but that's another day, another body, but it depends upon whatever is the vote up or down of this particular body, whether or not the Board of Zoning Adjustment even becomes relevant. And I'd be glad to entertain any questions if anyone has about that, but I don't want, I know this board knows that, but for the public consumption, I want to make sure you understand that when we talk about any variances for any use, dimensional, any type of variance, that is not under the jurisdiction of the Acadia's Tree County Planning Commission. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for that. Also, under unique features, we've noted typically with, and you'll see this a little bit further on the staff report, but we communicate with all department heads to make sure that any new proposed zoning change or development wouldn't cause any great concern with your department heads. So your police, your fire, your water, your solid waste, your public works, your street department, your, in this particular case, KYTC, which is Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. They did indicate that this particular intersection, let's just go back to a better, here we go. They have provided us with these plans, and these plans have been approved, and I believe these are the final plans. But KYTC plans to redesign and reconstruct the intersection of Cerulean Road and Jefferson Street directly adjacent to this property. In doing that, it will most likely take up a large portion of the Wilson Grocery barbecue place property. So that's something to consider too, that, you know, this particular request in theory is tying into an existing commercial use in the area that is at least on paper planned to be absorbed as part of a transportation cabinet project. So but I did provide two, let's see, this is a little bit closer view, so you can kind of see what that alignment is going to look like. And the property in question is in this area up here. So, moving right along, under department head comments, we have provided to you that information. The only thing additional that we received that wasn't what we call non-comments, meaning there were no concerns, they just responded back, we have no concerns. KYTC did provide us with a copy of these plans, as well as an email that explains where they are in the process of this particular project. And I believe they're going to be entering a right-of-way acquisition here very soon. So I think you'll start to see some movement in that area you know, once that happens. I've provided for you in your staff report under KRS zoning change requests must have findings under KRS 100 in order to be properly documented as a part of the request. And I've provided you with the three things that you can consider in a rezoning request as one of your findings. The first one is proof that the present zoning classification is in disagreement with the comprehensive plan. In absence of that, you can also provide proof that the original zoning classification was improper. And or you can provide proof that there have been major changes of an economic, physical, or social nature which were not anticipated in the comprehensive plan, which have substantially altered the basic character of the property in question. So once we get through the presentation and you have your people that will speak as it relates to this particular request, when you are thinking about how to proceed, those are the three things that you will need to make a finding about, or one of those three things, basically. It's always really nice to have all three, but you're not required to. So what we've provided for you in the staff report moving forward is some dialogue as it relates to each of these requirements. The first one is conformity with the current comprehensive plan. The current designation is R2, and we've provided for you in the staff report what those permitted uses might be. We've also provided some information in there from the zoning ordinance about I-1 districts, and it does state, like I alluded to earlier, that any permitted use in a business district is also allowed in addition to the listed uses under the industrial district. The existing I-1 district, which I showed you in the photograph, we can go back to that. There we go. It extends along the frontage of Kentucky 139 to the intersection of Kentucky 124 there. It also appears to be the site of, based on this information, we're talking about this location here, a former school. I think it's listed as Trigg County Elementary on the map. That's the I-1 district that's on this side. And the property is located right here where the star is. So it's not contiguous to any industrial district on this side of the street, where you have your potential connection to the existing industrial district is right there in that corner. What I've stated in the staff report is that the existing I-1 district is encapsulated by the medium density residential district on three sides, with Kentucky 139 functioning as a natural barrier separating the densities from the two established districts. And I've provided for you a recap of some of the sections of the goals and objectives taken from your comprehensive plan on page 6 of 15. The applicant did provide in the application findings of fact as it related to their request conformance with the comprehensive plan. They stated that the comprehensive plan anticipates that the properties in this area would be developed and used for commercial purposes, although currently very few properties are commercial. And we have reviewed that map back this way. There we go. This is the future land use map taken from your comprehensive plan, and we've briefly discussed this. The future land use map does identify this particular property as low to medium residential in this area. The comprehensive goals and objectives do state that all commercial and industrial development to be designed and planned based on a potential for traffic generation, traffic congestion, parking, adjacent land use, and nuisances. The potential for the traffic generation we discussed at the beginning of the staff report, and that's, you know, at the beginning of your staff report with those numbers. The in relation to the traffic generation of the uses that are allowed in this particular area as it currently is zoned are significantly different. It is anticipated that low use or low density residential use has the potential to be lower than what commercial use would be in this particular area. As I previously stated, you do have Kentucky 139 basically serving as, let's go to the zoning map, sorry. All the flipping back and forth make everybody a little dizzy. Kentucky 139, you can see, is acting as a natural barrier there between the existing industrial district on the right-hand side of the road and the existing residential district there on the left-hand side of the road. We did take into account a potential mitigating factor to consider when you are considering the applicant's request. While the I-1 zoning district does allow for a variety of industrial uses, the applicant has indicated a future intention to develop the property as commercial, should the rezoning request be granted. Keep in mind, once it's rezoned, it is allowed any use under the zoning district. So it's not necessarily limited to what is being stated is going to be developed in the staff report. Until it's on the ground, until it's built, that land can be utilized for any of those allowable uses that that I previously discussed in the staff report. According to the zoning map that's in your slides that you have, it is dated, 1985 and assigned in 1989. It appears that that's the original zoning designation based on the records that we have. And then, of course, the developed uses consist of primarily single-family residential. There has been a limited amount of new residential construction in close proximity to the property. The sole noted non-residential use we've discussed is at the corner of Kentucky 139 and 124, and it's the former site of Wilson's Grocery. And then we've talked about the plans that KYTC has for that property there at the corner. Other non-residential uses in the area lie along the southern right-of-way of Kentucky 124 and are not contiguous to the property in question, which if you'll look here, maybe need to back out a little bit so you can see the whole area, but there's an industrial district in this area here. Oh, there we go. Yeah, it's over here. So it's existing, but it's not contiguous in any way to this property. In the staff's review, there does not appear to be notable physical, social, or economic changes that would justify a rezoning of this type. The appropriateness of the original zoning, based on historic maps of the area, it appears that the property in question has always been part of this large R2 district. The staff does believe that the size of the tract in question is adequate in area to accommodate single-family residential uses. It appears that the original zoning as single family was appropriate at the time of the original zoning and remains appropriate to date given the existing development of single family residential uses in the surrounding proximity. An industrial designation appears to be less appropriate considering a rezoning of this type would result in an encroachment of the existing I-1 district into an established single family residentially developed area of the city. We have previously mentioned a possible mitigating factor to consider was the indication by the applicant to develop the property as commercial rather than industrial. It should also be noted, because the property is located on a state road, that there is a potential there for a variety of uses, including but not limited to commercial uses. Finally, one of the things we always look at in considering a request for rezoning is spot zoning. There are tests for spot zoning. We include those in your staff report. One, the use permitted under the rezoning is very different from the uses in the area. Two, the area is rather small. Three, The changes to a less restrictive district are not for the benefit of the community as a whole, but merely in order to provide an advantage for a specific developer. Based on the review of the request contained in the application as filed, it appears that, in our opinion, it may constitute spot zoning. The property is quite small, at less than 2 acres, and the applicant's property is encapsulated by a large R2 district on the western right-of-way of Kentucky 139. We have analyzed the request in accordance with KRS. We will evaluate all of the testimony that is presented during this public hearing. We are providing you some potential findings contained in the staff report, specifically that they show that the request appears to be in conflict with several portions of the comprehensive plan. The findings indicate that there are no noted changes of a physical, social, or economic nature that have altered the nature of the property, or that a new zoning designation is more appropriate than the original zoning designation. I'm happy to answer any questions that you all may have. I know that is a lot of information to throw at you all at once, and I'm glad to go back through any of the slides that we might need to, but I'm happy to answer any of those questions for you at this time.
Next step would be if any commission members have any questions, Ms. Herman. If it's not, we should can be recalled back after you hear the vote. Probably not testimony. Any questions of Ms. Herman at this time based on the presentation thus far?
Thank you.
We'll open the floor for anyone who would like to speak in favor of the application. And again, please state your name and address for the record.
Good evening. Greg Taylor. I'm from Murray. I'm here as the attorney on behalf of the prospective purchaser of the property and Mr. Fowler. Thank you for your time tonight. I think you got a lot of information in your packet. So when we originally reached out to look at this project, you know, there are several factors that go into looking at what's proposed to be developed and what's going on at this property. Of course, you know, we can zone anything we want to, but if what we want to be there is not happening, then there's no use. So what's there right now is a vacant lot. So there's nothing happening there that's of a residential use right now. Mr. Fowler has contracted to sell the property pending approval of this process so that a Dollar General can be constructed. So in discussing and talking through this, we go back to we submitted some proposed findings of fact. So although there is nothing in this particular property, it's not zoned, obviously it's not zoned what we want it to be right now, there are some very similar and exactly the same zoning just right across the street on the corner of the same property. There is, as she noted, right down the street. You know, I think if there are concerns about the type of structure or whatever, if you have concerns about that, we'll try to answer those. But we believe that a Dollar General would be a very beneficial thing to have at that location, and it would fit in with the comprehensive plan for the city. We don't believe it would affect the basic nature and character of the neighborhood. I mean, it's got similar type things, you know, right around the corner. The subject property does have all of the services are available to be there. If this were approved, we wouldn't have to have anything major happen to make it happen. So if you have any questions of me, I'm happy to answer them if I can. Mr. Fowler's here as well. but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have of me. But I think we've submitted what we believe to be proper findings of fact, and we would ask that you approve those. Todd, is that good?
Yes, I do have one question about the pond that's on the property. Is that something that was created, or is it a natural formation? Is it a sinkhole?
That's something that's created. Okay. I had it put on there 10 years ago.
Do you need to come up here, Craig? Yeah, come on up here, Craig.
I'm sorry, if you'll give us name and address, please, for the record.
I'm Craig Fowler, the property owner. The pond was built 10 years ago, more or less as a retention area.
Okay.
And a family fishing hole.
Any other questions for me? Okay.
Okay. Are there any others who would like to speak in favor of the application?
Hello, Brandy Zachary. You need the address too.
Yes.
1136 South Park Drive, Bowling Green, Kentucky. I don't really have anything to add to what Angela or Greg presented, but I am the civil engineer on the project should it move forward after the zone change. I've done a lot of these sites for the prospective buyer, so I'm happy to answer any kind of technical questions if anything like that comes up. So.
Any questions for Ms. Zachary?
Will this potential property use require a turning lane?
That will be something, as part of the process before we can ever start construction, we have to get permits through KYTC. So once the plans are designed and like fully designed, we submit those along with an application to District 1 over in Paducah, and they review the plans. Their KYTC will determine that. They are the ones that would come back and say, you need a left turn lane, you need a right turn lane, or your entrance need to be shifted from this location to this location. So they do all of that determination as part of their review and permitting for the entrance. And we can't put an entrance onto the roadway without their permit, so.
Any other questions? Anyone else wants to speak in favor of the application?
Name's Danny Powell at 1316 Jefferson Street, right across the street from where the Dollar General is supposed to be coming in at. I think it would be something good, especially for us being right across the street. I think that would be something that would be beneficiary for us, and I don't see any problem with it at all.
Any questions for Powell? All right, anyone else wants to speak in favor of the application? All right, if not, we will move on to anyone in opposition to the application. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Leslie Allen, and I live at 1277 Jefferson, which is, her pictures didn't show it, but which is 20 feet from the property line where this Dollar General is going to go up. And I am getting close to retirement. I just moved here 2 years ago, and I sunk my whole life savings into that property to turn it into something I love. The property's beautiful. All the open farmland behind it's beautiful. And now you're ruining my life. I won't be able to sit on my back porch and enjoy the deer and the pond, which has geese and herons and fish and frogs. And you know, I enjoy sitting on my back deck and in the morning and drinking a cup of coffee and watching the deer go by. And I won't be able to enjoy that. I won't be able to sit on my back deck. The noise from the deliveries, the smell of the diesel trucks, the smell of the dumpsters, that's just going to ruin my life. And I know for a fact, because I don't work for Dollar General, but I service Dollar Generals. I have 14 on my route. And is that going to be any great economic boost for Katie's? Because the ones that are exist, they have a really hard time keeping help. They're all understaffed. All 14 that I service and all the area around, they're all understaffed. And if it's a convenience thing, from my house, it's 2 miles to Main Street. And it's 2 miles to Canton Road. So that's going to be, in 4 miles, it's going to be $3 generals. And you're talking the possibility of, I know it's not your area, but the possibility of increasing area for the parking lot. Well, that's my house. What is it in it for me? My property values are going to tank. Like I said, I sunk my life savings into this house. I'll never get it back. I plan on dying in that house. And the traffic's going to be unbearable. The crime's going to go up because with retail, there's crime. I was in retail for 40 years. I know all about that. I can tell you the times I've had a gun pointed to my head. And what about the poor people who have to walk across the street to get their mail? With all the increased traffic, there's going to be accidents galore. People are going to get hurt and die just going to get their mail. And what benefit is that for them? Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Allen? Anyone else who wants to speak in opposition?
My name is Melissa Sal. I'm here in regards to the property at 1354 Jefferson Street, which is directly across from this site. My concern is with a residential property value decrease if a dollar store comes here. And how much will that affect our property taxes if this is rezoned? And also, 139 North is a detour route for I-24. And I know in 2022, there was numerous accidents where vehicles had to be detoured down 139 North. Numerous accidents occurred during that time. Traffic was backed up for hours at a time. How is that going to affect the dollar store? But my big concern is the visibility there. Because if you're at 1354 Jefferson Street, there is a rise in 139 North. And if you are coming from Princeton into Katy's, if you have semis for Dollar General, Pepsi trucks, Coke trucks pulling in and out for stock, you're not going to have ample time to stop. I think wrecks will increase there, and I just think it's going to be unsafe. As the lady mentioned a while ago, in that area, it's a lot of elderly walking back and forth to their mailboxes, which is across the road, is a big concern. The residents will no longer have their privacy that they are used to having. It's going to be harder to pull in and back out of your own driveway because of traffic coming in and out of the dollar store, and plus just normal traffic on 139. And I've talked to some that live in that area, and some are for it, some are not. But I cannot imagine anyone that would want a business parking lot right beside of their home. And again, like I said, you've got a lot of elderly that live alone. Who wants headlights shining into their windows at night? Because most dollar stores do not close until 10 p.m. Now that's going to disrupt their lifestyle, their life. That's going to bring up on some of them may get more scared. I think it would bring more theft to the area. And just from experience of going to the dollar stores locally, if you look out to the side, to me, they're trashy. Who wants all of the trashiness there in the residential area? I mean, you've got people that's lived there for many of years. And another issue is if you've got people on Cerulean Road that wants to say, okay, I'm going to take a shortcut and walk to the dollar store today. If they're crossing my property, if they get bit by a dog, if they fall and get injured, am I going to be liable because they were trespassing to get to the Dollar General? And I think you had mentioned the traffic count. What year was that?
The existing traffic counts were 2020, I believe.
Okay. Because, you know, I'm fairly sure that has increased a lot since then. But I just think, you know, for the residents that do live there now, I think their mind would be more at ease. And they would like it to remain as is. And another question. Has the property done been sold to the Dollar General? Does anyone know that?
It has
not. No.
I'm sorry, it has not. Okay. Because I was fixing to say, if it has, then why are we even here?
Well, this board would not take into consideration, but we look at is who's the applicant.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, the owner is the applicant, and that he can designate an agent to speak in his name. Title ownership is relevant to this board only as far as disclosure on the application.
Okay. But like I said, my main concern is the safety issues. Because like I said, if you're coming from Princeton into Katy's, there is a rise there. And even if, although it's city limits, and if you're still doing 45 miles an hour, if there's a semi pulling in or semi pulling out, I honestly feel like you're not going to have ample time to stop. And I think it's going to be more wrecks. And, you know, more people's going to get hurt. And that's all I've got.
Any questions from the commissioners for Ms. South? Are there any others that want to speak in opposition to the application?
Yes, let me make just an admission, if I may. The only evidence that the board will consider is the evidence that was generated during the year. Once the public hearing is closed, there'll be no additional evidence or consideration of anything for the board to consider at that time. The board sits in a quasi-judicial function, almost like a jury, if you will, but it's only based on the evidence that is received. Board members will not entertain or engage in any ex parte conversation with anybody about this matter once the hearing is closed. I know it's a small town and people know each other, and I understand that. But believe it on the lawyer, I'm going to admonish the board members not engage in any conversation outside of this hearing about this topic with anyone that has an opinion, wants to express an opinion, or try to influence the voter in any way. And that's in fairness to both the applicant and those that are opposed. So if anybody wants to try to contact the commissioner about this particular topic, I request you contact me first and Steve Underwood, Attorney Hopkins, and we'll talk about what your concern might be. We will, as Ms. Hearn has already indicated, the opinion based on evidence and based on findings of fact. You can't make the findings of fact until you've heard all the evidence. What I typically recommend is that once the public hearing is closed, then you will schedule a hearing to come back and then make a vote, an up or down vote on the recommendation to City Council concerning whether or not the rezoning would be recommended for approval or would be denied for approval. The City Council always has the right at that particular time. They can conduct their own public hearing. They can review the record in this case and make different findings, whatever might be the findings of the commission, or it can adopt the Planning Commission's findings and recommendations. So the City Council has three options. They're the final stop in this process. Any questions by anyone about that? I would recommend to the chair, once the public hearing is closed, if you want to, consider a date and time for a meeting to be convened. Sometimes, as a courtesy to everyone involved, you can have a called meeting as long as you get a notification of that into the media. You can wait a month for your next regular meeting and then take it up at that time. The board can consider findings of fact, or if the board wants to, it can consider a called meeting, put this item on the agenda at that time. The next meeting would not to be received additional evidence. Once the hearing is closed, then there's no additional evidence to be received. It's simply a vote at that time based on a findings of fact that come before the board. Oftentimes, we'll request for the board's consideration favorable findings of fact based upon the evidence consistent with the record, or findings of fact that are a denial based on the evidence that's received or the staff report. And then the board at that time makes its decision, makes adopted its findings of fact, and makes its vote consistent with its findings. Glad to answer any questions by the commission members or either the public or council. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So any final commentary, pro, con, on this application?
Chairman,
any questions? Yes, sir.
The gentleman who we hired to put up the sign on the property out there, Mr. Scully, came by and picked his check up for wrecking that sign. When he did that, he dropped off a letter that was to be delivered to the board. He was not under oath at the time he did that.
Okay.
But I'm not the one to keep it.
Okay. So should I read this into the record? Or
any objection to this particular item?
I object. We have no way to respond to this, to the person that wrote the letter, to ask them any additional questions. I mean, we cannot confront the accuser. It's essentially hearsay.
Yeah, it is hearsay. Typically, petitions signed by people, unless there's some compelling reason why a person could not be present and make that presentation during a hearing, and everybody has an opportunity to ask those questions. Typically, Mr. Chair, I don't recommend that those types of items of evidence be brought in. Yes, sir.
All right. Any other questions, comments?
Ms. Brady, but you were the engineer?
Yes.
With what we have shown, it's based on the layout and the traffic, there is actually a sketch of a semi truck that's entering the property.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be the only path of entry?
Yes, they will just have the one entrance.
Okay. Is there going to be a point in time in which there could be multiple trucks on the facility at the same time?
I mean, I can't say no, but I've never seen that. I've never seen that instance happen, but I do know that 90% of the stores I've done, they have the layout, the drive aisle out front between the two rows of parking is like 36 foot wide, so it allows enough room for the truck to like pull in the front of the store and then back to the side. I feel like typically at least the Dollar General deliveries from their their own trucks that have Dollar General on them are either early in the morning or later in the afternoon. I can't say that Coke or somebody else wouldn't show up at the same time. I just don't have a way to know that.
Okay, I guess a better question is, the facility design where it would accept multiple trucks, or is it just a single truck at a time?
It's only set up to receive one truck at a time.
Okay. Thanks.
I can add to that. I'm Leslie Allen again, and I service Dollar Generals, and I've seen as many as 6 delivery trucks in the parking lot at one time.
It's impossible.
Coke, Pepsi, beer, Frito-Lay, Hostess, and Dollar General trucks. Sometimes Dollar General trucks get 2 trucks in one day. The one on Main Street does numerous times.
I can't comment on that one. But if you look at the size of
for the
record, for Greg Taylor again, you can look at the size of that. They're the Dollar Generals that are constructed all across West Kentucky and West Tennessee are not of a size where you could even get that many trucks in the parking lot. I mean, if there was nobody there, I mean, you can look at it and see. I mean, that's what it's not gonna, they're not gonna come all at once. But I mean, that's all I'll say.
Any other questions? Commissioners, anything else? Okay, so we will officially close this hearing on this rezoning application. Yeah. All right. So we are probably going to move into our regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting. Take a break. You're welcome to stay for the meeting. The meeting is open to the public. Because we have a commission that is not here this evening, we are not going to take a vote tonight, I don't believe. So it's basically just going to be a very short meeting to be able to review our previous meeting minutes and financials and things like that. So, and we do have one item that Matt wants to present.
And our next meeting likely returns for him to be eligible to vote on this application. He would sign an affidavit for the record that indicates he's listened to the public hearing. So he has to listen to the public hearing to be eligible to vote. He's ineligible. He's unable to listen to the tape for the public hearing, and he would be disqualified not participating in the discussion in that vote.
Okay. And do we need to have any disclosure as far as conflicts of interest with commissioners at this point, or is that?
If any commissioner has a conflict of interest or has a concern about the conflict of interest, I always recommend that you bring that up, you make that disclosure, and then we can have a discussion about whether or not that's a disqualifying event or not. I realize that people know people, but it's kind of that admonition, Your Honor, Judge Wilson was saying, you know, is that likely to affect your ability to hear the evidence and fairly and impartially make a decision in this particular case? But if someone is related by blood or marriage to an applicant or someone, well, then obviously pretty close to a conflict at that point. But if any commissioners want to disclose any concerns about potential conflicts, now's the time to have that discussion. Otherwise, we'll presume all commissioners be eligible to vote at the next meeting, and Mr. Blakely, if he listens to the tape, and signs an affidavit to that point.
Chapel.
I rise for a ruling by the chair to whether or not I might vote on the petition. The reason for that, the petitioner, Mr. Fowler, and I were business partners at one time. We developed a joint piece of property and, in fact, rezoned that piece of property. I do not have any projects or any relationship with Mr. Fowler other than what happened several years ago. I have no financial interest in the property, direct or indirect. So I'm asking the chair of the board to make a determination whether or not I should qualify for voting on the mission, the petition.
Can I ask a question? Judge, how long ago was that relationship with Apple?
How long was it, Greg? 5 years, 4 years?
5 or 6 years.
Yeah. No continuing relationship between you two financially?
No.
Thank you. Chair, whether or not you think a conflict, but you can ask for a comment or direction.
Right. Anyone have any thoughts they would like to share? Is Judge Wilson being able to vote on this particular matter, given the relationship, previous relationship with the applicant? Comments?
I would move that he be allowed to, if he sees no conflict, no direct conflict of interest.
Okay. Rick?
I agree that as a judge, he certainly has had the opportunity to make decisions about people he knew. He made them good, so.
Right. Yeah, I given Judge Wilson's background and reputation, I see no reason why he shouldn't be able to vote on this particular petition when we address it in the Planning Commission. Okay, break.